This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
Good Tuesday morning, everybody. I am Glenn the Geek from Ocala, Florida.
And I am Christy Landwehr from Aurora, Colorado, and you are listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for February 17th, episode 1106. This episode is brought to you by the Certified Horsemanship Association and RevitaVet. Good morning, horse world.
Houston, we have a problem.
Ability equals skill plus knowledge.
I got a bad feeling about this.
Here's a safety tip for you from the Certified Horsemanship Association.
Missed it by that much.
How can I change this to make it better the next time?
Help you, I can. Yes.
Time for Training Tuesday on Horses in the Morning with the Certified Horsemanship Association.
Good morning, everybody. Thank you for joining us this morning, and welcome to winter. I got to tell you, when I saw that Lexington had a foot of snow, and you and I, Christy, you've been to Lexington a bunch, and we lived there for 4 years. With a foot of snow, there's anybody going to go anywhere for a week. There's just nothing going to happen for a week, because they got one snowplow, and then they have to go get salt from, like, Pennsylvania and bring it back. So nothing happened in Lexington for a while, or the whole state of Kentucky. Or Tennessee with the ice.
And that's the thing that scares me about back there, Glenn, is those ice storms. See, we don't get those out here in Colorado. We get snow, but we don't get the ice storms, and there's nothing you can do about that. I don't care how many snowplows you have.
Well, a friend just texted me from Lexington, and it's 5 degrees this morning there. And they're high this week, the highest they're expected to get till Saturday. And this is, you know, Lexington's, you know, on the verge of the South. It's expected to be 22. That's going to be the warmest or the warmest it gets till Saturday. So the snow isn't going anywhere. Nothing is happening there. The ice storm in Tennessee, I wasn't covered a whole lot, but I saw some of the pictures. They had like a half an inch to an inch of ice across the state. And you're right, ice is nasty. It is really nasty. So I just feel for everybody. And now the storm has headed to where? New England. To give them another 5 inches.
Or New England. We had one of our members yesterday send me a photo, Glenn, of the snow halfway up her barn. Halfway up her barn.
Wow.
Laying against it.
Wow.
Now, on a serious note, they really are having a problem with barns roofs collapsing and houses roofs collapsing, for that matter, in Massachusetts and Maine and New Hampshire and Rhode Island, or all over the Northeast up there. So that is a problem, and something that I remember, you know, with our farm in Pennsylvania, when we'd have blizzards, we'd have to get out in the roof, and you'd have to shovel the roof, which is dangerous enough.
Uh-huh.
I mean, yeah, it's not exactly fun to do. How about out west? I mean, we took callers yesterday, but we didn't get any from out where you are in Colorado. Has it been a good winter, a hard winter, or what's it been like?
You know, we cannot whine. We have had an easy winter. So what was it, Friday? We had a 60-degree day, and I was outside after I got off of my computer teaching riding lessons. And then we ended up getting, you know, this storm came in late over the weekend. And this is after I taught again on Saturday morning, all morning long. And remember, Glenn, I have an outdoor arena. So here I am in Colorado in February teaching outside. It's crazy. So now we have probably 4 inches on the ground. But, you know, for us, that's no big deal. The kids go to school. Everything happens. We have snowplows. So it's no big deal. The kids were hoping for a snow day, and I laughed at them. I go, you live in Colorado. You don't get snow days.
Yeah, you should be in Lexington right now. They'd have the week off. That'd be good.
That's right. That's right.
Wow. So you guys, and I know that North and South Dakota were having a warmer than usual winter, you know, with a lot less snow. So there are some areas that are getting less, and then it's all just being dumped on the east.
It feels that way, which is really unfair. Yes, it's not being spread out evenly across the nation for sure this year.
Now, No, that is
we
that
need
is
to pass
true.
A law
actually,
that the snow needs to be evenly
yeah.
distributed.
It needs to be spread out.
Okay, yeah,
California
wouldn't.
Needs some. Well, the snow the ski resorts have to out there have to be complaining a little bit in Colorado. They're just making snow like crazy, I bet.
Yeah, and you know, we haven't been too bad up in the mountains. Has been getting some snow, but they are still making it. But they have been getting it, and there's all the ski resorts are open, all the different lifts are open, even the ones that are super high and normally rocky are all open. So we're getting enough snow in the mountains, so hopefully we'll have decent water in the spring. You know, that's what we all worry about is the drought stuff and then the fires
right.
if we don't get enough moisture.
Right. Interesting. All right, well, that's not what we're talking about today. We're Jennifer, what's coming up on today's show?
On today's training episode with the Certified Horsemanship Association, brought to you today by RevitaVet, cue the dramatic music, zoom in for a close-up of the wide-eyed teenager unlocking the basement door against her friend's advice. That's right, we're talking about fear on today's show, and we've got two accomplished horsewomen here to debut the conversation in Shelley Carmody and Julie Goodnight. So stay tuned for the fray, folks.
Thank you, Jennifer. Well, yeah, we are talking about fear today, and you know, if there's one thing that we've gotten probably more emails and things about over the years is for asking us to address the fear situation. So I'm glad we're doing this show today because it is something that people have to deal with. Usually somebody deals with, I deal with it every single time Jennifer wants me to ride a horse. Driving a horse, I have no problem. I probably do things I shouldn't, right? I probably am. I'm over my head most of the time, and I probably do things I shouldn't. But riding, that's a whole different story. Every time I have to get on, then I have fear. Until I get going, and then it's fine. But, you know, when you first get started, I definitely have fear when riding. But driving.
Well, and I think it is, Glenn, kind of a fear of the unknown, though, because, you know, I am not as comfortable when I drive because it's not something I do all the time. And so that's
right.
a little bit, you know, scarier as well. And then when you're doing a new discipline, like I know Jennifer used to jump too. And the first time you start to jump and then you start to jump higher and then you start to do combinations and bounces and all kinds of things. And you realize, wow, I'm really high up in the air when I go over this jump. Wow, if I fall off midair, that's a really long fall. And you're just, your mind starts to work a little bit, I think, sometimes and get you a little bit, oh, to the point where it's scary. But, you know, we don't just have fear with horse stuff. I'm sure everybody listening has had fear with something in their life, whether it's, you know, doing a sport for the first time, like rock climbing, or maybe they almost get hit in an accident just driving their car, or maybe they're about to take a test at school, or whatever the case may be. You know, maybe they're applying for a job that they really want, and there's fear during the interview. It's life. Fear is part of life.
And, you know, fear and phobias go together, right? I mean, most people, I wouldn't say everybody, but most people have a phobia of some sort or another. I know I have bridges.
Not everybody
Jennifer
discovered
spiders.
Them.
Yes. Well, you do eventually. Usually the hard way. But
you know,
Jennifer's
I don't mind driving over bridges, but boy, riding a horse across the bridge, that gives me sweaty palms. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And we used to drive our carriages over bridges and covered bridges and all kinds of bridges, and the metal grate bridges were the worst because most of the horses would freak out. But when we belonged to the carriage club, we used to have to drive over all kinds of bridges. And the covered bridges would freak them out a little bit because they usually had wooden floors. I'm talking about Lancaster County, Pennsylvania now, the only place they really have covered bridges. And they've had wooden floors, so that would make echo. It would echo in there. So that would get the driving horses
yeah.
going a little bit. But,
yeah. That makes sense.
So what's your phobia? So do you have a phobia?
You know, I have a phobia, but it's not anything to do with horses. It's, I don't like those spiders. I'm kind
yeah,
of arachnophobia.
Yeah, Jennifer's
yeah,
with you there.
I'm
I have
not
to kill
a
the
big
spiders.
Fan. They're a little creepy crawly for me, whether they're small or big, but I think my fear stems from when we first moved here, we were cleaning out kind of an old garage-like looking thing that was on the property, and there were some boards, and of course, we have our gloves on and we're moving things. And I did not realize this, but did you know that Colorado has a desert tarantula?
No,
okay.
I didn't know that. They had a special
I did not
tarantula
either.
Just for you.
But I got to find out. Yes, a mating pair. Isn't that lovely? So I lift up the board, and there's one huge spider the size of my hand, crawls over my shoe to get away. Oh my gosh. And then all of a sudden, his friend follows. Yeah, oh my goodness gracious me. That was not fun for me, no.
We have the wolf spiders down here in Florida, which are the ones about the size of your palm that are very fast. They're very, very fast. So we keep bug spray in the house because occasionally they'll show up. We haven't had one in a long time, knock on wood, but occasionally they'll show up. And, of course, if you live in Florida, you know all about banana spiders, which are the yellow ones that make the huge webs. And the ones Jennifer has to deal with on trail rides all the time. So we're not in spider web season right now. Spider web season comes a little later in the summer. That's spider web season. We actually have a season for that here.
Lovely.
We don't have spring. We have spider season.
Spider season, that's right.
I'm sure the Florida Tourism Board is very happy right now that you are discussing that.
Oh, we have big bugs of all kinds down here. You got to be comfortable with bugs when you live in Florida. So does that make you want to move to Florida now, spider season?
No, it's too humid, hot, and sticky there for me. But, you know, I love visiting.
Hey, we're supposed to get down to 25 one night this week and a high of 40. It's going to be chilly here in Florida.
Yeah, that is cold for you guys. That's super cold.
So now, what's going on with the Certified Horsemanship Association? Other than probably nobody is making any money teaching lessons anywhere east of the Mississippi, unless you're in Florida.
Yeah, unless you have maybe an indoor that's heated too, right? The only other way to do it. Oh, my goodness. No, we have a few things coming up that I'd love to talk about today. We're working on a rewrite of our riding instructor manual. And, boy, that committee, it's a volunteer committee, and they are good. It's a bunch of instructors that have been doing this business for a long time, and our other riding instructor manual hadn't been updated in about 10 years. So they're working on that, and I think it's going to debut in a year. So they've been working on it now for about a year. So it definitely is a process that takes a while, but I'll tell you, they're just great, and I wanted to just give them a shout-out and let folks know that when that debuted, we'll let everyone know about it and that it's available, and it's going to be a really good manual.
Wait a minute, Christy. You've actually found a committee of people who agree on something, horse people that agree on something?
Aren't you amazed? You should come one day, Glenn, to one of our meetings, and Jen, I'll tell you, we're all in the room for the same reason, safety and education around horses. We don't care what breed, what discipline, we don't care. And our people, we get along. Isn't that great? It's great.
It's unusual, that's for sure.
It is. It's great fun. The only thing we try really hard not to talk about is bits and bidding, because that we get a little bit intense over bits and bidding. But other than that, we do pretty well.
That's why everybody has a bucket of bits. That's why everybody has a bucket, because even within yourself, you can't agree on what bit. So that's why every horse person has a bucket of bits.
And the buckets are fun. And then you go to the garage sale and you pick up a couple more and add to the bucket of things maybe never to put in your horse's mouth, but still really fun to share. Oh, yeah.
That's right. You collect them just because they're cool.
You got
absolutely
to
do. Oh, yeah.
You never know when you might need it. You never know.
That's right. You never do, but I'll tell you, some of the ones out there, like the bicycle chain bit, you just collect that to collect it. Not going to use it, but here it is because it's fun to look at. Look at this. Yeah, good fun. So we're doing that. So that'll be great. So I will let you know more as we find out how we're doing with that. But shout out to that committee because it's a lot of work, and, they're making some hard decisions and getting it done. And then where I'm going to next month, I have some travel coming up, so I want to do a shout-out for those that are maybe in the area because I'd love to meet you, and for those that I know, I want to see you. I'm going to be going to the American Quarter Horse Association convention in March. They're having it in Fort Worth, so it'd be fun if you're going to be there. And then, again, in a couple of weeks after that.
Hold on a second. I've never been to that one. That must be a big convention. Wow.
It is. It is. It's good size, and they have a wonderful foundation dinner where they induct their horse and some of their trainers and people into the Hall of Fame, and that's always a tearjerker. And then they've got a great awards banquet, and they always do something fun. We're going to go into Cowtown and do a whole extravaganza in Cowtown. So they always have neat things for us to do.
Does it set a record for the most people with cowboy hats and belt buckles in one spot?
Probably. There's a lot of them.
It must.
There is a lot. And they have their suits on, and they still have on their boots and their buckles and their hats with their suits. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
Definitely.
That's right. And now what's the AHA?
So that, it actually in our horse world stands for two different things. It stands for the Arabian Horse Association, and we are actually in the process of doing a contract with them, which we're excited about. It's not quite signed, though, yet. And then the this one, though, is in relation to American Hippotherapy Association. And I'll be going to their event. It's also in Fort Worth later on in March. And it is for the physical therapist and the occupational therapist and kind of the medical model. So not necessarily the riding instructors that teach the hippotherapy, but to the medical professionals. And I'm excited because I get to teach riding to these folks. We're going to put them up on horses and teach them. Yeah. It's going to be really fun. I'm really looking forward to it.
And then, of course, you have the Equine Affair coming up, too, right?
Yep.
Is that the Ohio one?
Yes, it is. And you know what we do every other year? We do our board meeting, our spring face-to-face, in conjunction with it. So we all come in the day before. We do our spring board meeting. And then some of us stay and do presentations and help work the CHA booth. We always have a booth there. And it's just a really fun thing to do. So that's what we're doing in Ohio. We really love the Equine Affair folks. They're very easy to work with, and we've been going to that show and the show in Massachusetts, oh, my goodness, over 15 years now. It's a long time.
I think that's been a long time since we've been to the Equine Affair in Ohio. It's been years since I've been there.
Probably 10 years,
yeah. Isn't that the one where we met Reese from the Dressage Radio Show?
I believe
she
it is.
Doing a seminar there once, and that
that's
was like
the
one of the
first
times.
Yeah.
First time I met her, yeah, was up at the Equine Affair. That's a long time ago. It's a fun show,
you'll
though.
Have to
it
come
definitely
back.
Is a fun show. Yeah,
it is. Yeah, it is a lot of fun. Yeah. It has a lot of stuff that you don't see at the Massachusetts or California shows. I like it.
Yeah, you can
and
come hang out in our
shop.
Booth.
We get to shop.
Yes, yeah.
That's right.
Lots of good shopping. Absolutely. So we're excited about all those things. And then, of course, we have our regional conferences in March that we talked about a little bit last month, but they're getting all kinds of people to attend them. One of them is at the Rocky Mountain Horse Expo here in Denver in March. Another one is going to be in Oregon at Canyon View Equestrian Center and College. And then another one of them is going to be at Houghton College in New York. So we have one in kind of the east, the west, and the middle in March. So anybody that lives anywhere near those, it does, you do not have to be a member. You just come and learn about horses and check us out. And we have some really fun speakers going to all three of those. So you can go on our website and see more.
Oregon, New York, and Denver in March. And then you guys have some new DVDs out, right?
We do, yeah. Every time that we go to our international conference, we produce in between, normally 3 to 5 new YouTube videos that are completely downloadable and embeddable for people to put on their own sites or to go ahead and use for training for students or their staff or themselves. So I recommend folks go on and look at those. We have one on how to put a fly mask on for the first time, how to fly spray a horse for the first time. I do one on exercises on horseback at the Walk, Trot, and Canter. So we're, taking a foot out of the stirrup and holding on with one hand on the reins and doing a bunch of different things, and especially for those English riders, that's a little bit harder on them sometimes. So doing things that might happen in reality, getting back to the fear thing, I think that's one of the reasons why I am such a huge believer in teach one stirrup work, because the reality is when you ride a horse, you will lose your stirrup. And the reality is you're not going to lose them both at the same time and be lovely and balanced. The reality is you're going to lose one and you're going to be hanging off to the side. So if you learn how to do that, while you walk trot canter, then when you lose it, the fear goes away. No more fear.
That is true, and we talk a lot about no stirrup work here on the show. Horse Nation leads a no stirrup month in the month of November, I think it is. And then Jamie always does her tries to do her no stirrup month, and it definitely does help.
It does, and I think that the fear thing. I'm going to go back to that just really quick. I grew up. I think I've told you guys on the show a couple of times, working for Medieval Times, and we're riding the Rose Parade and, doing a lot of gymkhana and doing a lot of jumping and I rode on the Arabian Horse Circuit, and I was lucky enough to go all the way to Nationals doing that. And so I've had a lot of background, so I never really had fear. I was kind of an all-breed, all-discipline gal and just really enjoyed a bunch of different things, and I just would get on and do it. Let's just do it. And then I had this little thing called a baby. Little Sean man came into my life, and there's some hormones that kick on in a woman's body when she's pregnant that I didn't really know anything about. I didn't really pay much attention, and had my baby and got back in the saddle again, so to speak, and went, I'm not going to go jump that. No, I'm not going to go really fast and barrel race those. No. it was really interesting, and it got worse after my second. Then I had Kyle 2 years later, and it was worse. And I started talking to my OBGYN about it, and she said, it's because you have the mama bear hormone. And there's a fancy name for the hormone, and I'm sure all the people on the call are like, it's called the blah, blah, blah. I can't think of it. But the fancy name for the hormone kicks in, and you basically, your body says, I've got to protect my kids. I can no longer fall off. I can no longer hurt myself. Because then the likelihood of, you know, me not being there for them is real. And even though, you know, dad's wonderful and what have you, we just can't help ourselves. And we tend to do that. So I had this huge fear. So now I'm sitting here going, okay, do I stop writing? What do I do? And I decided, no, let's just go ahead and slow but sure get back in the saddle. And I did reach out to people like Julie Goodnight, who's a good friend who's going to be on the call later, and other people. And I said, all right, you teach fearful writers. I've never done that before. So now I need to know, you know, how to do this. And they did. They gave me exercises, mental exercises and physical exercises to kind of work through it. And it really is a mind over matter thing. And little by little, I came back. I can now go fast again on my Gymkhana horse, pole bending and barrels. I'm back. As far as jumping, I don't think I'll ever be doing 4.6 again, though. And I think part of that is also being over 40. I think that that's just smart on my part. You know, my body's getting a little bit more beat up as I get older. So I'm not doing that anymore, but I am jumping again. Not nearly as high as I used to, but I am. And so now I feel like I can teach a fearful rider. Whereas before I thought, oh, I can't teach fearful riders. I don't even know. I don't have empathy. Well, now I'm pretty good at it. So now when I have people come to me that have either had a fall or scared of the unknown or whatever the case may be, I truly do feel like I'm much better at teaching fearful riders than I was before because I can relate.
Very good. Well, we are going to get to all of that in a few minutes here. And you have a couple of great guests. Of course, Julie's been a guest on our shows since the beginning, 7 years now. We've probably been having Julie on. And I know this is one of the topics, and I'm excited to talk to her about it today because this is one of the topics that she spends a lot of time on and she speaks about in her clinics, because I don't think there's any rider or driver, for that matter, at some time or another that doesn't have something happen that causes a little bit of fear, right? I mean, that just what you described. In your case, it was mommyhood. But in other cases, it could be anything. It could be falling off. Most of the time, it's falling off and then having to get back up. And usually, it involves breaking something. Now, if Jennifer had given up after breaking something, she would have never done that.
I wouldn't have made it past 10.
No, that's right. That's right. And then continuing to break things never seemed to bother her. So now that you're right, age has a lot to do with that, too. And that, this is an important topic because we have so many riders, probably the largest group of riders are women coming back, either back into riding or getting into riding for the first time in their 40s.
Yeah.
So, you know, our bodies just don't work as well. And we're, you know, it just seems like things break a little easier now. So it is something that causes some fear and for the largest population of people getting into riding.
I would agree. And, you know, there's a lot of ways to make sure that, you know, that that fear doesn't overcome, because that I think is the hardest thing. Once it overcomes, then you're right. You probably will never do the sport again. And that's too bad. And, you know, I do a risk management talk all around the country at different things. As a matter of fact, I just came back from American Camp Association and did a risk management talk to the programs there that have the horse as part of their program. And I always mention to them, I say, hey, look, you know, we always talk about how the horse industry and riding horses is dangerous. I'm sorry, it's no more dangerous than skiing. It's no more dangerous than rock climbing. It's no more dangerous than bungee jumping and all the other things, including your lake and your, you know, and those kinds of things that you have normally at camp environments, right? I mean, all of those things, it just requires you to put precaution into place to know how to deal with issues before they come up and to try to be as safe as you can be. Obviously, you're dealing with another living creature that has its own brain with horseback riding, so they might have a different idea than you do that day. But overall, if you put those precautions in place, you know, the safety part is there. You just have to remember those steps and make sure to follow them.
Right, right. Do you know, it's interesting when you take a look at the number of deaths in the United States caused by animals, and people are always surprised to learn that dogs cause more deaths than horses do. Bees, spiders, cows, all cause more deaths than horses do.
So so the horses are right, Glenn. They should be afraid of those cows.
That's right.
All along, they were right.
Uh-huh. Smart.
So, you know, it is surprising that's the case. And, I mean, when you do take a look at statistics of rider accidents and how many people actually get hurt as opposed to falling off and all of those numbers, they're actually kind of surprising, and I wish I had them here right now. They're kind of surprising that they're much lower than you think they would be. Because we tend to hear about, you know, a rider that dies, and it's tragic, and we tend to hear about that. But when you take a look at the number of rides and the number of, you know, even in eventing, you know, when there's a rider death like there unfortunately was this past week in Italy, there. But how many rides went on this weekend around the world? So when you take a look at that and take a look at those statistics, it's very low. Your chances of being in a car accident are much greater.
Absolutely, and I wanted to share with people, we just did that risk management talk I was just talking about. Joe Montgomery, who's one of our members and a regional director out here in Colorado, did it for us as a webinar, and it's the one that's currently on our site. And if you go to that and if you watch that webinar, there's actually a slide or two of exactly what you're talking about, Glenn. It gives all of the stats on all the different things from the National Health Institute of America, and it talks about those. So for anybody that likes those kinds of numbers and wants to see everything Glenn's talking about, you can check out that webinar on the CHA website, and it'll share that with you.
And what was it under again? What do they look for again?
It's under on the education tab, go under webinars. And if you click on webinars, it's the very first one that comes up. We just recorded that one last month. It was January's webinar, so it's the one that's being featured right now.
All right, very good. Well, let's take a break for your title sponsor today, and that's the good folks over at RevitaVet. And then we're going to come back with our first guest and talk a little bit more about fear as the day goes on. RevitaVet is the number one name in your horse's preventative maintenance and rehab using state-of-the-art infrared therapy. RevitaVet's IR2 does many things to help your horses, including promoting healing by more than 50%, reducing inflammation and relieving pain, stimulating acupressure points, and raising performance levels without medication. All of that leads to a healthier, happier horse and less medical bills, and that is something that we all look for. And now they have a free RevitaVet app that you can use in conjunction with the RevitaVet IR2 to make your life easier, enabling you to select and customize therapies for some of the 76 most common injuries or conditions, including abscesses to wounds and everything in between. Riders that are using RevitaVet IR2 include eventers Philip Dutton, Buck Davidson, Gina Miles, barrel racer Sherry Servey, and our own shooting champion Tammy Serrant. Learn more about infrared light therapy and the IR2 at their website at RevitaVet.com. That's RevitaVet.com. Your horse will thank you for it. All right, Christy, don't have any fear, and introduce our first guest.
I will do that. This is Shelley Carmonine. I have known Shelley for quite a few years now. She's been on our board of directors. She also now is the Iowa state rep. She is a master certified instructor for us as well as a clinician. And she teaches a variety of different types of folks. And she has been in many different states. She's worked for the Girl Scouts before in Michigan. And now she works in central Iowa and is the equestrian program specialist at the Jester Park Equestrian Center in Granger. So hello, Shelley. Welcome to the show.
Good morning. Good morning. How y'all doing?
Doing fine. So what else would you like to say about your place there in Jester and what I didn't say when I introduced you? Anything else you would like to add?
Well, I think it's important for people to understand that the Jester Park Equestrian Center is probably the best-kept secret in central Iowa. You know, we sit on 1,200 acres. We look over the Des Moines River. It is a gorgeous area to trail ride in. People see Iowa, they think of Iowa, and all that comes to mind is cornfields. And Iowa has so much more than cornfields.
Sure does, especially the photos you guys put on your website and on your Facebook page. They're amazing.
Yeah, and I get to live here every day. <It's kind laughs> of cool.
Right.
All right. Well, we've been asking all week long. People have been calling in with, obviously, the weather's been number one topic here in the horse world. So give us the report on what Iowa's been this year.
Iowa has been cold and snowy. I can actually see the grass today, but they say that's going to change tonight.
Of course. You usually don't see the grass all winter long, do you, in Iowa?
You know, this is my first winter out here. I'm originally from Michigan, so I was expecting...
Oh, so this is nothing. This is like
this is the cold is what's getting me. You know, it comes across that prairie, and I'm like, darn it, Iowa, that's offensive. It's cold.
It's cold. Okay, we'll take that.
So, Shelley, we are talking today about fear. So I just want to ask you just an overall defining question before we go into any details here. How do you personally define fear as it relates to being around horses?
Well, Christy, in my experience over the years, I have found that fear generally comes from two different sources. The first one I classify under generalized anxiety. It's what I call the what-if factor. And I've seen this a lot with individuals who've been told scary horse stories from a friend or a relative. And before they even interact with a horse, their creative mind has already developed the perfect storyline for a horse-related catastrophe. And then at the other end of the spectrum is more of a post-traumatic stress situation where you have an individual who has been witness to or been involved in an accident. And that fear can be crippling. And some individuals may experience panic attacks or the inability to react in a safe and effective manner. And riders who experience those various levels of fear, they can be embarrassed or they can feel ashamed, which often prevents them from seeking help or support.
Absolutely. And you know what? We were talking, Gwen and I, earlier before you got on the show, Shelley, and we did not bring up, and you are absolutely right, the horror stories. Because, you know, as we all know, when you work in our industry and somebody who doesn't work in the industry says, so what do you do for a living? And you go, oh, I'm in the horse industry, blah, blah, blah. Before you can say any more, they go, I one time had this horse that ran down the trail and knocked me off on a branch. Right? Always. You always go down that negative road instead of somebody saying, wow, I love horses. One time I rode up on this mountain and the sunset was beautiful. Right? You always get the scary one. And that's a great point.
You always get the scary one. That is right. You know, I think it's important for people to understand one simple thing. If you only take one thing away from today, I want people to know that it's okay, that you're not alone in this. You're not the only one who's ever been afraid.
Very true.
No, and as I mentioned earlier, I think this is the one thing over the last 7 years here in the Horse Radio Network that we've probably gotten the most email requests as a topic about is fear. And you know, we talked a little bit about it, and I'm sure you've seen it out at the Jester Park Equestrian Center, and partly is because people are coming into riding older. We have a lot more 40-year-olds coming in than we do 12-year-olds. And, you know, you didn't grow up with horses and, you know, it's something that that when you come in as a 40-year-old, you're going to have fear. You're not going to be like the 12-year-old who hop on anything and ride bareback across the field and jump 5-foot jumps and not think about it. You're not going to do that when you're 40.
You're right. You know, sometimes people, that fear is driven by, you know, they say, well, what if I get hurt? I have bills to pay. Or, you know, what if I can't move fast enough to get out of the way? You know, as you age, your body changes. And, you know, that can cause, you know, reason for anxiety right there.
Causes me anxiety all the time now that I'm 50.
That's constant state.
Yes, that's right. Everything just hurts more.
I know that you wanted to share with us a personal experience and how you overcame it, and then we will go ahead and talk a little bit more about issues on the ground with horses, because it's not just about riding, and how to handle some of those. So do you want to go ahead and share that with us now?
I sure can. I grew up in Michigan, and I had a unique childhood. So I was raised in the commercial horse business, and at my fingertips, I had 200 head of horses. So you talk about a dream world for a horse-crazy kid. You know, horses were like oxygen to me. Every thought, every dream, every movement involved a horse. when my parents needed to ground me for something, they grounded me from the horses. I thought my life had ended. But, you know, my life truly did change on July 11th of 2001. I had been competing at a county fair. My horse, Mr. One Shot, had a heart attack, and he died. I was on him. I was horrendously injured. But I think the psychological issues that followed far outweighed the physical damage that was done to me that day. On top of the physical pain, I was grieving the loss of my horse, who was my best friend. And as I began to heal from those injuries, then all of a sudden I started having nightmares. And the flashback started. And then this crippling fear that I had never known around horses, it took over my life. Eventually, I quit riding and even stopped handling horses. You couldn't get me in a stall with one. You couldn't get me to touch one. And let me tell you, that's kind of a problem when your job is working on a horse farm and handling horses. About 4 months after my accident, I was diagnosed with post-traumatic stress disorder. And when you hit rock bottom, you've got two ways to go, straight up or sideways. And I really feel that I spent a lot of time sideways trying to figure out what in the world I was going to do. Well, the first thing that I had to do is I had to recognize that fear, and I had to admit out loud to myself, Houston, we have a problem. I can't live this way. I cannot live with this crippling fear. I cannot just stop functioning. I knew that I needed to have goals, you know, and I kept telling myself, my goal is to ride again with confidence. But in the early days, that was not the truth. I was just going through the motion. I knew I needed to have a plan, a path to reach those goals, but I had no idea what I was doing or how to do it. I think the most important thing, aside from recognizing and admitting that you have a problem, is finding a support group. Now, the first person to support me after my accident was my mom. She was the first person that said to me, you know what, life is going to be different now. And that's okay. Different is okay. You can do this. So I'm lucky. I've got the greatest mom in the world. You know, she was my very first riding instructor. So, of course, she knew my background and she knew my passion, and it was important for her to help me become whole again. The other thing that I did is I instilled the help of a couple of professional instructors, one being Tammy Gaynor, who's a good friend and a mentor and a CHA instructor. She taught me to live outside my comfort zone. And my accident is what led me to Julie Goodnight. And she gave me the tools to find success, but I had to do the work.
And I am just so happy, Shelley, that you are talking about it now and that you're able to mention that, because you're right. You had a double whammy with, yeah, you know, the grief of the loss of your horse and the injuries and all of those things. And now, I mean, you're back to this, your career again. And now you're able to teach others that might be going through fear and those types of things, whether it's on the ground or up top, and how to deal with all that. And it's just wonderful that you were able to go on the show today before Julie, because like you said, she's a tie-in to you that helped you overcome this as well. So, you know, I would love to chat a little bit about on the ground issues that happen with horses and how they relate fear in people, and then how we can help ourselves get over those things as well as help the horse. Cause for some of these things, you know, the horse is reacting out of fear as well.
Mm-hmm.
So what are some things that you have been involved with and that you've seen on the ground that can cause the fear, and what are some ways to help with those types of things?
Yeah, you know, the fear of being stepped on or bitten, the fear of your horse slipping on the ice and snow and falling, or maybe falling on you. People have a fear of being kicked or run over, a fear of a horse pulling back when tied or not loading properly into a trailer, and then all of a sudden, my goodness, you're trapped with an animal that outweighs you by 1,000 pounds who's panicking. You know, and I think that sometimes that what-if factor ties into some of this anxiety. And so then your list of what people are afraid of or anxious about becomes endless.
And so do you have some specific mental exercises that you personally do or that you give your students to to help when they're in a fearful situation?
Yeah, you know, since I had a personal encounter with fear, I use some of the very same practices and techniques and exercises that have helped me. You know, instead of reinventing the wheel or making it like this outlandish science experiment, I just keep it simple. I take it back to the basics. I take it back to the foundation of horsemanship. And so here's a few examples. Number one, your mental game. I only visualize positive interactions with horses. Only. You know, YouTube, going on there and watching the worst wreck videos, they're not helping you. Don't watch them. I have my own worst wreck video that plays on a loop in my mind sometimes. So I don't like to put extra negative thoughts into my mind. So I always visualize what I want my horse to be and what I want our relationship to be. And then I go for that, for what I'm seeing in my mind, that positivity. The other thing that I encourage people to do is spend less time talking and spend more time listening, specifically to your horse. Your horse will tell you everything you need to know if you just take the time to listen. And that sounds so simple, and it is. Watch your horse, or watch horses in general. Watch them when they're by themselves, or when they're together in turnout, during work while someone else is riding, or during their quiet time when they don't have any interaction with a human. And this allows you to start developing an understanding and a feel of who horses are and how they think and how they react and how they move. From a physical aspect, you know, if you're already anxious and you're nervous, I'm going to encourage you to lay off the Starbucks and the Mountain Dew. You might be tempted to grab that latte on the way to the barn because you find it some sort of comfort food, but the added caffeine is not helpful when you're already anxious. So by, you know, you're anxious, you're headed to the barn, you know what you got to do when you get there, and then you load up on the caffeine, and it really does work against you. So I would encourage people, you know, to lay off that stuff until after. Remember to breathe deeply, slowly, and often. This is something that I have to remind myself of, is just remembering to breathe. I find that singing helps. And you don't have to be the greatest singer in the world. Your horse really doesn't care. They just care about the fact that you're there spending time with them. And, you know, some horses do like singing. My guy does. My favorite motto is fake it till you make it. Even if you don't feel like it's going right, even if you feel like, my goodness, I cannot go into that arena today, I cannot enter that stall today, you need to remember that horses are masters of reading body language. So stand up, square your shoulders, pick up your chin, and get to work. For me, it's all about the foundation, you know, helping students develop consistent safety habits on the ground, which, you know, that translates to on horse as well. Grooming doesn't really seem like a big deal to people, but, you know, like I said, dial it back, make it simple. Spending time grooming your horse, you know, it promotes a healthy relationship between the horse and handler, and it also helps you to develop that eye, knowing what's normal and what isn't on your horse, whether you own the horse or not. You know, if it's your school horse, you want to build that relationship with them. It's important to develop that eye for what's normal and what's not for that horse. Incorporating your breathing when you're hands-on, or even when you're picking up feet. You know, if you have anxiety about picking up a foot, you know, start breathing before you bend over. You can incorporate inhaling and exhaling at a comfortable time. And then you want to watch your horse for signs, you know, that they're relaxed, you know, the resting of a hoof or yawning, licking and chewing. You see, that's a gift. That's not something that me as an instructor can make your horse do for you. That is your horse being comfortable with you. And so beginning to look for those positive signs is helpful. I also like to use patterns and basic horse showmanship skills that reinforce confidence and communications between a horse and student. Like I said, it doesn't have to be a science experiment out there. This doesn't have to be difficult. Shake it down to the bones, take it back to the foundation, and find confidence and success in some simple things. To me, groundwork, I ride from the ground. And that is so important to establish the timing and the feel and the communication and understanding, which in the end, it equals confidence and control. If I have the respect of a horse on the ground and have control of his feet and his mind when I'm on the ground, then that's going to transfer from the saddle as well. Once I have a student who's built some confidence, and, you know, I have a great little horse who's a solid round pen horse, and he joins me in taking that student to the next leg of their journey, I use a lot of Julie's information, you know, like her round pen reasoning. It's fantastic, you know, for people to develop an understanding and a feel for the horse in the round pen. I do a lot of in-hand work, exercises to teach standing and patience. You know, again, stand like a statue. One of my favorite exercises that Julie ever taught me, reinvent the wheel? You know, this stuff is great. So you have to pick and choose what works for your life and apply it at the proper time.
And Shelley, I loved when you talked about the mental visualization.
Mm-hmm.
I once took some courses from a sports psychology gentleman, and he was talking about whatever your sport is, it's really good to imagine you like you're watching yourself on TV, first of all. So you're back in the stands, right? And you're watching yourself have that, making that basket if it's basketball, or hitting that home run if it's baseball, or jumping, you know, over that fence if it's riding. And then you want to visualize yourself as actually doing the activity. So for us, it would be up there and we can see our horse's ears in front of us, right? And we're actually feeling the movement of the horse underneath and what have you. And I'll tell you, that visualization, doing it from away and from close up, and like you said, only successfully, is absolutely huge. And I love that you brought that up.
Absolutely. You know, I found that that is something that I had to immediately address for me personally, was to stop thinking about the negative things and let's start putting my positive interactions with horses had far exceeded anything negative that had ever happened with a horse until the time of my accident. So I had plenty to draw on.
Absolutely. And then the other one that I love that you brought up, it's so important. You know, we talk about the natural aids, right? Your feet, your legs, your hands, your voice. Okay, breathing.
Yes.
Natural
mm-hmm.
aid. Have to breathe. And, you know, I love that because the minute you stop breathing, whether you're on the ground with them or whether you're up on top of a horse, that horse knows, because the horse also has that same thing in their body. If they stop breathing, they're also nervous, scared, and afraid. That's why we all want that lick and chew so bad, because they can't lick and chew without taking a sigh, without
That's
breathing.
Right.
Right?
That's right.
So it's so important,
Absolutely.
You know, and so people, you don't see us lick and chew because we don't do that as that sign of relaxation. So you have to kind of mentally, you know, ask your students, if you're an instructor, okay, breathe, because we're not seeing you lick and chew, so could you breathe, please? And, you know, for everyone listening, boy, the minute you stop breathing, that's why I think, Shelley, your comment about singing is great, because if it's just you and your horse doesn't care. And I'll tell you, there's this really scary part of the trail here by my house that has dogs that jump on the fence. And those dogs are going to jump on the fence no matter what, and there's no way I'm going to get them to stop, and it is what it is. And every time we go by there, you know, whether it's on the ground or in the saddle, you know, the horses that we ride get a little concerned every time,
uh-huh.
even though they've seen it a lot. And I do. I make sure I sing, and I've been by there numerous times. But, you know, your adrenaline goes up a little bit, your heart rate goes up, and then you think, oh, my goodness, I'm not breathing. So you sing a little song. And I'll tell
yeah.
you, when I sing a song, we get by that with so much less issues than when I don't sing the song. So thank you so much for bringing up breathing and singing. I think that's huge.
Absolutely.
Now, I know Glenn had a question for you. He was reading your bio, and he really wants to ask it. And I thought, well, if we have time, we'll go ahead and let Glenn ask his question. So, Glenn, do you
sure.
want to go ahead and ask away?
Well, I just saw in there that you oversee the Department of Corrections stable. What's that about?
Well, the stable hands. We have a unique program here where we have three gentlemen who are incarcerated. They're nonviolent offenders, and they join us at the farm 4 days a week, and they handle the horses, and they do the chores, and they drag the water hose, and they stack the hay. We're not allowed to put them up on horses, but, you know, I do all of that work, the groundwork with them as far as safe horse handling. And our hope is, you know, it goes beyond just having some help in the stable, you know, from people who have to come to work every day. our hope is that they actually see, they begin to find self-worth, and they make different life choices. So So, yes, I do have three inmates.
Well, not everybody can say that, right, Shelley?
That's right.
And there have been some very, you know, very effective programs of training horses in prisons. Of course, Lexington has one. And then out in Nevada, Jamie, normal co-host for the morning show, she's leaving Thursday to go out to the auction out there. I didn't tell you that, Christy, but she's leaving to go out to the auction. They auction off the Mustangs that they've trained every year, and she's looking at picking up a Mustang for eventing. So she's driving up to Nevada to the prison to the auction and going to be doing that. And they do a great job up there with the Mustangs that they train. So that's why I was asking you that, because there are some effective programs around the country for that.
Yeah. I mean, it's on my bucket list. I would love to visit some of these programs and see what they're doing and how they're doing it, that sort of thing. I think it's important.
Very good.
I got a question for you, Shelley.
Sure.
Now, obviously, you have a small pool to survey this way. With the gentlemen who work with you from the prison, are there differences in where their fears might come from? Because you always think of people in the criminal world as being the tough guys, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. If you were to compare their reactions and their learning curves when it comes to fear to the public at large?
You know, from the guys that I've worked with, which is about six at this point, I currently have three. The one gentleman, you know, grew up in the inner city, and he was honest with me. He said, the only time I've ever seen a horse, there was a cop on it, and he was chasing me. You know,
well,
so those aren't real good life choices, you know. So he was terrified of horses. And then I have another gentleman who grew up on a farm in Minnesota. So, you know, he was used to having horses and cattle and sheep, you know. And so he really didn't have a whole lot of anxiety coming into it. Most of them are, you know, they're not as big and bad as they appear once you take them out of their comfort zone.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Question I have for you about the Jester Park Equestrian Center. I'm a driver, and I see you do some driving out there. I see some Percherons.
We do. We have a lovely team of Percherons. We just finished up a weekend of sweetheart sleigh rides. You know, people can come and go through the beautiful park that we have in one of our sleighs, and we give them hot chocolate and roses and cookies, and, you know, it's a whole big romantic thing. It's fun
and very cool. and you have the best draft horses around, Percherons.
I think so. Tick and Asia are gorgeous, and they're a great team. We're very, very blessed to have them.
They're my favorite horse. Black Percherons.
Mine too.
And you nailed it. And they look really good pulling a sleigh. So,
yes, they do.
Good job.
It's hard for a Black Percheron team to look bad anywhere.
Yeah, it's true. That is true.
So, Shelley, how do folks find out more about you, more about the Jester Park Equestrian Center? What is a good website for everyone to go to?
The fastest and quickest way to get to us, you know, hit us up on Facebook at the Jester Park Equestrian Center, and then all of our links are listed there so you can find us quickly. Because I can never remember the links.
No problem. And it's J-E-S-T-E-R is Jester, correct?
Jester, yes.
Just like the
Wonderful.
Court Jester.
That's right.
Well, Shelley, thanks so much for being on the show today and for sharing your story and for giving us some great information to help folks with the fear, whether it's on the ground or in the saddle, and some things to do, you know, that are positive and deal with not only physical preparation but also mental. I just really appreciate you taking the time today.
Thank you so much for the opportunity. It was my pleasure.
Well, we are going to take a break right now for our song of the day, and then we're going to come back, and we have everybody's favorite Julie Goodnight coming up on the show in just a few minutes, and we're going to continue the conversation on fear. I've seen her do clinics on it, and she is definitely a resident expert on the topic. So we'll talk to her in just a minute. But first, we're going to take a break. I have a little, let's see here. How about a little Jared Rogerson today?
Ah. I swear I wasn't looking. I just turned around and you were there. We spent all night talking about the things that make us shine and how we never wanted it like this. You're an angel, no doubt about it. You can see right through my disguise. And the way that you're flying's got me mesmerized. I know you're something I could never forget. You have a good life, I hardly know you at all. I may never see you again, but what a weekend, I'll miss you so much. I hope you remember my name. You could have been my best friend, but till our trails meet again, have a good life. I'm like that pack of cigarettes. I got nothing you need. So go on living your dream, and I'll keep chasing mine. Let's don't pretend I don't have regrets. Have a good life, I hardly know you at all. I may never see. But what a weekend, I'll miss you so much. I hope you remember my name. You could have been my best friend, but till our trails meet again, have a good life. It's over our heads and out of our hands. So have a good life, I hardly know you at all. I may never see you again, but what a weekend, I'll miss you so much. I hope you remember my name. You could have been my best friend, but till our trails meet again, have a good life.
Have a Good Life by Jared Rogerson. You can find all of his music at jaredrogerson.com. Of course, he is the ultimate horse guy. He's good looking, he sings, and he has a job where he rides horses for a living into the mountains. So that's not a bad thing. You're listening to Horses in the Morning. I am Glenda Geek here with Christy from the CHA, the Certified Horsemanship Association. Coach Jen is in the producer chair. We are here today, and we're talking about the topic is fear. And, you know, Christy, after we talked about phobias earlier in the show, I looked up the top phobias, and I have the top five here, and you might be surprised at a couple of them. Number five on the list is fear of dogs, which goes along with the dogs being more people dying from dogs than horses, for sure. Number four is the fear of open or crowded spaces. Number three is the fear of heights, which you kind of would guess. Number two is the fear of snakes. And what would you guess the number one fear would be?
I'm not sure.
Yours, the fear of spiders.
Is it?
Yes.
Oh, there you go. All right, well, I'm in good company. So now I can't. My husband can't tease me as much. I'll let him know.
Yeah, that's right. Fear of flying is ninth on the list. I thought that would have been a little higher. I pictured that one being a little bit higher. But number 17 is the fear of chickens. So that is kind of a unique one, I thought. Number 17 on the list, the fear of chickens. So there you go. Who knew that was?
Well, you know, there are descendants of dinosaurs. A chicken is. I mean, you know, it is.
Hey, well, we had chickens. We had some crazy ones that I was kind of afraid of. So.
Right. Well, yeah, they could bust a grasshopper in half with one peck. So they're really scary.
Hey, let's bring Julie Goodnight into the conversation now.
Absolutely. So you know what? I know that everyone's like, oh, you don't need to introduce Julie. I'm going to introduce her in my own way, Glenn. So Julie, I know you're listening. You're going to have to suffer through on this. We all know her as, of course, the horse master on RFD TV and, of course, all the clinics she does and what have you. But I met Julie, actually, when we were both on the American Youth Horse Council board together. And she found out that I was a riding instructor, and she was the program director at the time of CHA. And she said to me, well, why don't you get certified? I'm like, yeah, I don't know about that. I don't know if I want to do that. And she's like, well, you should get certified. Like, it doesn't really matter. I don't really need to do that. So I kept seeing her at meetings. And finally she goes, look, we are doing a clinic where I'm doing the certifying along with another lady up in the mountains, really close to where you live. You need to come. It's a 5-star guest resort. You remember, Julie, the home ranch. And she says, you need to come.
Yeah.
And I went, all right, fine. So I went and I got certified, and it was one of the best things I've ever done personally. And now Julie is a dear friend, and now I work for the association of which I got certified by. So thank you, Julie, for starting me on this journey. And we're so glad to have you as our international spokesperson, our master instructor, and a clinician for us. So welcome.
Well, thank you, Christy. We've come a long way since those years, haven't we?
That's a long time ago. I was thinking today, I was like, wow, that's like 15, 16 years ago. Yeah.
Yeah.
Been a while. Been a while, but pleasure to have you on. You know, both Shelley and I mentioned that you were one of our mentors to get us through our fear of horses. You know, mine came based on hormones that kicked in after having my two babies, Sean and Kyle, and I kind of got over it. And then, of course, Shelley's from the accident that she just talked about, and that she also reached out to you. So I can't even imagine how many hundreds of people you have helped in the fear journey. And we just so appreciate that you do that for people. How do you define fear as it relates to being around horses because of everything you've done? Is there things in particular that you've noticed?
Well, you know, I always tell people, you know, if you have some fear of horses, that probably means you have a pulse. That, you know, fear is it's a normal and natural emotion, and horses are big and potentially volatile animals, and a healthy dose of respect keeps you safer around horses, makes you, you know, maybe think through things you wouldn't, you would do without thinking. And so there's nothing wrong with fear. It's an emotion that keeps us alive. When fear becomes a problem as it relates to horses is when it starts controlling what you do and don't do. So I see a lot of people that are struggling with confidence issues around horses, and perhaps they start avoiding situations. They start making excuses why they can't make it to the barn today. I can't really ride my horse because I have laundry to do, or, you know, or maybe my horse isn't feeling very good today. I think I'll just leave him in the barn. And sometimes we're not quite honest with ourselves, and we start engaging in these avoidance behaviors, and then subconsciously you start feeling guilty, and you know subconsciously that you're actually just avoiding it because of your fear. So then you feel guilty, and guilt is an emotion that really compounds fear and makes it much more difficult to deal with. So I think to just define it, if fear is controlling what you do or don't do with horses, and something that you once enjoyed you're unable to enjoy again, then perhaps the emotion of fear has gotten a little bit out of control and unbalanced in your psyche, and it's time to do something about it. And there's lots of stuff you can do. You can, you know, I know hundreds of people that have gotten back in control of their emotions and been able to go back to enjoying horses like they once did.
Hey, Julie. By the way, number 68 on the list of phobias is equinophobia, which is a fear of horses, and it says it's 90% women, which is interesting.
I'm not sure I buy into that, Glenn.
I'm just saying what it says here on the phobia website. Hey,
what we know is that we're up to almost 90% female in participation in horse sports anyway.
Right,
so
exactly.
The scale
right.
is skewed before we even started. But
that's true.
Men have fear of horses.
I agree.
I always say, if you ever watch rodeo on TV, and you know how they zoom into the bucking chutes right before those cowboys are, when they're strapping themselves onto a 1,000 or 2,000-pound keg of dynamite, and either the bronc horses or the bulls. And look at the fear, look at the look on their face and tell me that isn't sheer fear. And they are just people that thrive on the fear. They thrive on the adrenaline rush. They love the challenge that presents. But everybody has fear in some situations around horses. Now, you know, what causes one person to be fearful may not be what causes me to be fearful. And what causes a very confident and accomplished cowboy to be fearful is probably, light years beyond what might cause the average female rider to become fearful. But they do experience fear there. It's just maybe at a different level. And also, I think that men are less likely to admit it, whereas women feel okay about admitting it.
Well, that brings me to my next thing. Christy mentioned earlier the embarrassment factor. So something happens and you talked about being at the barn and, you know, you start making the excuses. And the embarrassment factor has to be huge there, too. That has to play into it in a big way.
Sure, absolutely, especially in
pride.
Look,
I mean,
fear,
your pride is hurt, right? I mean,
yeah.
you basically hurt your pride. That's what's
sure.
happened.
Nothing like, horses are really good at humbling you. And my husband always says that the right horse can really build your confidence, and the wrong horse in the wrong situation can take it away in a heartbeat. But embarrassment is definitely part of it, and anyone can become a victim of fear. It's not something that's just male or female. It's not something that's old people, not young people. It affects all levels of rider, from beginner to expert to professional level riders. Some of the people that I've worked with and that have struggled the most with fear have been professional level riders that have gotten in a bad accident and gotten hurt. And, you know, when that happens, there's a biological factor there. If you got hurt doing something with horses, or if you even just thought you were going to get hurt, you know, a near miss can be just as traumatic as an actual injury. I call that a psychological injury. So if you've ever had a situation where, oh, my gosh, I thought I was going to die in that moment, that can be just as real an injury as an actual physical injury. And if you've had, and we call that post-traumatic stress, you know, if you've had some trauma, then it is a biological fact that a fear memory is formed in the amygdala of your brain, and that memory will surface anytime you're in that situation again. It is a survival instinct. And so what happens is people don't understand that. They think they're over it, so to speak, and then all of a sudden they're in that situation, and emotionally it feels as if it's happening again. That's that fear memory kicking in. And there's nothing we can do to erase fear memories. They're seared in your brain. What you can do is understand it and know that that's a physiological response. It is going to happen. Be prepared for it and have a plan for how you're going to deal with it.
So, Julie, can I ask if you ever had a personal experience with fear, whether it's around horses or skiing, which, of course, is your other sport, or whitewater rafting that you used to do years ago as a guide, all the different things that you've done that are high adventure. Have you ever had anything personally, and then how did you overcome it?
Of course I've had, and, you know, I've had numerous, of course, wrecks with horses, and I do have to say the instances where fear has become difficult to control for me were actually in skiing in whitewater and not so much with horses. With horses, I've always been able to, first of all, the worst injury I've ever had was skiing, not with horses. I've been banged up quite a few times and all of that. But for me, most of the time with horses, I was able to think it through and realize that I made a mistake I shouldn't have made. I now know I made that mistake and that caused the wreck, and I'm not going to make that mistake again. So I have taken comfort from that. And, you know, I do have to say, as I get older, I'm 55, and as I get older, I find myself being much more cautious around horses. And but I think that's healthy, and it's not, overpowering me in any way. But I had a bad injury skiing one time in deep powder, and that was 25 years ago. I would say I've gotten over it now, but it took me years. I was fine skiing in any conditions other than powder, but when I got into deep powder, I was just sick to my stomach. And, of course, when you're fearful, you don't ski the way you should. When you're fearful around horses, you don't ride and act the way you should. So then your skis get out of control. And, you know, so it's a compounding problem. But I learned to, I worked and worked and worked on it. I use visualization a lot. I have a female skier who is someone I really admire. I have studied her skiing. I have seared the image of her coming down a steep run in my head. And I try to ski like that. So she's a role model for me. And there's also certain specific problems that you encounter when you get nervous on your skis. One of them is sitting back on your tails and getting your hands back behind you. And so I at the top of every run, I remind myself, don't do this, do that, do that, do that. And I have that picture in my mind of my friend who's an incredibly accomplished skier, and I go down that hill with her in my mind. And those are some really good techniques for people that are struggling with fear around horses. Visualization and thinking of the positive outcome, not the negative outcome, is really, really important for helping you manage that emotion of fear.
Well, you know what you just said, the telltale signs. So, for example, you mentioned what it is in skiing, and in riding, it's the ever-present fetal position, right? When somebody starts curling up into a ball on top of their horse.
Yes, yes, and that, that's really a reflexive sort of instinctive reaction that we tend to have physically when the emotion of fear starts taking over our body. But with horses is compounded because when you get into that position, your heels come up, you're clenching with your lower leg, and you're pitched forward, so you're grabbing on the reins. So now your horse is getting this, not only is he getting a signal that something's wrong, he should be afraid, but you're clenching his sides so he wants to go faster, and then you're clenching on the mouth, which makes him uncomfortable, which makes him fearful. And what do horses do when they get fearful? They want to run. So, you know, absolutely. Now you got a horse that's getting nervous and he's speeding up and you're clenching harder and it's getting worse. And so because you're dealing with a live animal with horses and an animal that is biologically programmed to adopt the emotions of the animals around them, that's what makes fear with horses such a difficult and complicating thing.
Absolutely. And I'll tell you, you know, the fear, I mean, we talk a lot about the fear of falling, but, you know, some people, the fear of falling is because of a specific thing that maybe they've experienced, like a rearing horse, right? Or a bucking horse, or a
sure.
horse that every time I'm going to pick up canter, he's going to kick out to the leg. I know he is. And so you get yourself all worked up about it, or those that always spook at a certain location or shy. So what are some specific things that you've dealt with folks that have maybe these specific issues that you could address?
Well, you know, the interesting thing about horses in that scenario you just described is horses are extremely intuitive animals. They're very aware. They are also very emotional animals. They're every bit as emotional, if not more, than humans. And so any emotion that you have, your horse is feeling. Also, if you start thinking, my horse is going to spook when I get right down there to the corner, you cannot have a thought without there being some minute physical reaction in your body. And because a lot of your body is connected to the horse's body, he feels that. And so if you start thinking, my horse is going to spook when I get right down there, he feels you start thinking that. And the closer you get, the more you tense, the more he starts thinking, something's wrong, I should be spooking, right? You know, so horses have this uncanny ability to act the way you think they're going to act. And so if you can just, and by the way, we do have control over what we think about. And you can consciously choose to think about more positive things. And even if I always tell people, even if you just think about the last movie you saw, it would be even better if you could think about a positive outcome. You know,
I was just going to say, as long as it wasn't a horror movie, that would be best. No zombies and things, you know, coming out of corners for your horses. Yeah.
Okay. But that's where we employ techniques like singing a song. If you sing a song, not only do you sound very casual and relaxed to your horse, but your mind is engaged in remembering the words and remembering the melody. And so your mind is otherwise occupied. And, I talk a lot. I do seminars a lot on managing a fear of horses. And the most important thing I can tell people is there are three real concrete things you can do to manage the emotion of fear. And first of all, you have to understand that there is a mind, body, and spirit connection. The mental, the physical, and the emotional are three parts of your being that are interconnected. You cannot separate them and isolate them. One affects the other. And that's what we were just talking about. When emotion starts taking over and you start reverting to this fetal position, it is because the emotional aspect of your being is overtaking the physical aspect of your being. And in normal everyday circumstances, our mind, body, and spirit are evenly balanced and evenly having input into how we function. When the emotion of fear takes over, first it takes over the mental part, takes over and sort of absorbs the thoughts in your brain, and then it takes over your body physically and manifests by, you know, tensing, curling in the fetal position. I'll give you these three very concrete things you can do. And this would, of course, apply to anything in your life that has to do with fear, not just horses. But the first is keeping your eyes focused. One of the first things that happen when the emotion of fear starts overtaking the other parts of your being is that you lose focus, and we tend to look down, and our eyes sort of glaze over a little bit, and you're no longer engaged in your environment. And so if you can just keep your eyes active, looking around, taking in information in your environment, I see a woman in a red jacket, I see a banner hanging on the fence and it says such and such. I see a beautiful tree up there, and your eyes engaged and focused, that will help you keep control of the mental aspect, of the mental part of your being. Secondly, your breathing. Another thing that happens right away when the fear response kicks in is that you either start holding your breath or you start very shallow breathing. And interestingly, by the way, your horse is the same way. He holds his breath or he starts shallow breathing when he becomes nervous. And so if we can take deep abdominal breaths, that will help override all those other pesky symptoms of fear, like an increased heart rate and that adrenaline coursing through your blood and increased blood pressure. So deep abdominal breathing will help you control the physical aspect of the fear. And then finally, if you can stay in control of your body language. And so if we always use this saying, fake it until you make it. If you can stand up tall, put your hands on your hip, and act like you are the supreme being in control of everything in the universe, and you can adopt a confident body posture, that gives you control of the physical part of your being as well. And if you add to that, you already have made a plan to think positive thoughts. So now we're controlling the thoughts in our brain. We're thinking positive, at the very least thinking about something else. We're in control of our body language. We're controlling our eyes and our breathing. So now you're in total control of the physical and mental aspects of your being. So the emotional aspect of fear won't stand a chance. And, you know, just standing up in a more confident posture will give you more confidence. So the physical part of your being is very important here. So we like to use a technique called give me more, I can take it. And that's just a little phrase that helps you adopt a confident posture. So if you say, come on, baby, bring it on. Bring me the biggest, baddest horse you got. I can take it. And it's not that you really want the biggest, baddest horse you got. It's that it's just a trick to help you adopt a positive and confident posture. Then that will help control the emotion of fear. So those are some real concrete things that you can do. But you have to have a plan, and you have to have the self-discipline to actually work on these things.
Absolutely, and I love those three things. Those are so easy for people to remember, and you're right. It's going to help you in more than just horses, but in all situations. Public speaking, right? How many people are scared of that?
Yeah.
All kinds of things before you do it.
Where does that come down on the list? Glenn, where is public speaking on your list? I thought that was going to be number one.
You know, I didn't see it. It's like a number 25.
But
then,
you know, when you think about it, though, how many people actually have to do public speaking at any time or another? There's a lot of people that never have to do it. So, when you think about it, I mean, we have to do it all the time. So, it's front and center for us. But I never had trouble
talking.
But you're
right, Christy.
And I don't think you did ever, Julie, either. So, I mean, we're good talkers.
Well, that's actually not true.
Oh, really?
I'm actually, Christy knows this about me, the people that know me best know that I am actually an extreme introvert, and I am actually quite shy when I get around a lot of people. Public speaking has never been difficult for me, but I think that, but you know what's difficult for me? Talking to people one-on-one, people that I don't know, and I struggle more with that than I do with public speaking because I'm shy and I'm an introvert. And my mother pointed out to me one time that when I'm speaking publicly, there is a barrier between me and the audience, a sort of psychological barrier, and that's within my comfort zone. And I've gotten over this. I spend all day at expos talking to people one-on-one, but it's not easy for me. I have struggled with it in the past. So we all have our own little issues, and you know what's incredibly fearful for one person is nothing for another person, and vice versa. So it's a very individual thing.
That's true of entertainers, too. I owned an acting company for a long time, and some of the best entertainers, Johnny Carson, for example, he hated being in small groups. You know, he did great in front of large audiences, but he hated small groups. He hated social situations. He didn't like parties, and that was all because he had that same kind of thing. And I've known many entertainers who won't say two words unless they're on stage, and then you can't get them to stop. You know, it's just that way.
I'm sort of that way.
Yeah, it's built for that purpose.
Yeah, it's just it's a different intensity, and it's just how you know everybody's different, and it's how you perceive the world and perceive the environment. We all do it in a different way.
Interesting.
And isn't
very
that good?
Good
it all
Julie.
Makes the world go round. Yeah. Well, Julie, thank you so much for being on today. Go ahead and tell us, like, the next expo where you're going to be, what your next show is about, and let people know how to find out more about you.
Yeah. Well, on the TV show, we've got all new episodes playing now that were filmed here at my ranch in Colorado. We've got some with jumpers. We've got a great episode I think is really great. It's with my dear friend and my assistant and my business manager, Twyla Collins, and her little granddaughter, and they're working on showmanship. So that's a little different than we've ever done before. And so those are airing now, and we'll be filming new episodes in Tucson in a few weeks. But my next public event is in Fort Worth at the American Rodeo on February 28th and March 1st. I'll be there. That is a RFD-TV event, and I'll be there to meet and greet the public and answer questions and do some demonstrations. That's coming up pretty quickly here in Fort Worth. And then from there, I go to the Horse World Expo in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. I'll be there Thursday, Friday, and Saturday for that event. And then I go straight from there to Tucson to film the TV show. And then from then on out, I'm pretty much hopping every weekend. There's a lot of big expos, the Midwest Horse Fair, Equine Affair in Columbus, and some other stops along the way. And then I started on my clinic tour, and I do that through the end of June, take a little bit of time off in July and August, and then I'm back on the road again for the fall clinic tour and the expos.
And if anyone wants to come to Amarillo, Texas in October, Julie is going to be at our CHA conference there, and it's open to the public, and we get great school horses, and you get to be taught by Julie. So come one, come all in October to Amarillo.
And that's going to be really fun, be able to see the American Quarter Horse facility there, and I'm really looking forward to that event.
We're thrilled to have you. Well, thank you, Julie. We will go ahead and touch base again here really soon. And thank you so much for your insight today. As always, it was a pleasure to have you on the show.
My pleasure. I'm happy to do it anytime.
Here, Julie.
Thank you, Glenn.
Julie's a lot of fun. If you've never seen one of her clinics, you have to stop out to where she's going to be. You mentioned, or she mentioned that she's also going to be in Ohio here coming up at Equine Affair. So you can check her out there, and you can see the full schedule on she does a ton of these. So you can see the full schedule at juliegoodnight.com. It's always fun having her on the show. Well, we've run out of time, Christy. That's it.
I know. That was good, though. We talked about all kinds of things. I am thrilled. So
are you less fearful now?
I am less fearful, but okay. I don't know about spiders. We didn't talk about I'll have to visualize
yeah,
and help myself.
You know, there's some things. There's some things that just never go away. You know, there's just some things
true.
That never go away. I think, you know, I'm always going to have a fear of bridges. I don't care what anybody says. And you're always going to have a fear of spiders. You know, Jennifer has a fear of tunnels. So if we ever go anywhere where it's a tunnel bridge, we're done. We can't.
Oh,
we have to find the ultimate
boy.
Route. Yeah. So there's like in Maryland has one of those. There's a couple of those around. And we always have to find the alternate route. And it's usually much longer. But there's, you know, I can't drive it and she can't drive it. We can't switch in the middle. So that's
right.
That's a problem. So thank you so much, Christy. It's been a lot of fun. As always, you can find Christy and the Certified Horsemanship Association at
chainstructors.com. You can find someone near you to work on these fear issues. All of our list of instructors is on there and accredited stables. And, of course, we will be back on the third Tuesday of next month on the show again. Glenn, I'm thrilled. This is one of the most fun things I do with my job. I love this part of my job.
Well, I'm glad. I'm glad you enjoy it. That's fun. And I certainly have fun chatting with you every month. It's something different every month, and I like that. And we also want to thank RevitaVet, who makes this all possible. You can find them at RevitaVet.com. If you've never looked into light therapy, check it out. It's something worth taking a look at. They have lots of terrific information on their website about light therapy at RevitaVet.com. You can find all the past episodes of The Certified Horsemanship. We've been doing this for a long time now, so you can find all those past episodes at horsesinthemorning.com. And, of course, the best way to listen to our shows in the recorded version is just to go to the app. Go to the App Store, iOS or Android. Search for Horse Radio Network. It's free. It's easy. It's simple to download. And it's easy to use. And you can find Horses in the Morning. You can find this episode and all the others on there. We'll be back tomorrow morning, 9 a.m., here for another Horses in the Morning. Jamie will be here. Jennifer will be here. And we'll be having some fun, like we always do on Wednesday mornings. Thanks, Christy.
Goodbye.
Keep talking, because I'm trying to find the closing music, and it always eludes me for some reason. There it is.
Excellent. It's coming. Bye. Have
Thanks,
no
Christy.
Fear, everyone.
Be safe. Be warm.